Morning, everyone. Members, we're going to start. Representative Clark, why don't you bring your testifiers? We'll give you about 5-10 minutes for you to wrap up real quickly. And then, members, Representative Clark had a bill. We're just going to have an informational hearing for a few minutes here while we get together. We'll hear from the proponents, from Representative Clark, and then we'll hear from probably someone representing the workers. Good morning, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, committee members. I want to just say I really appreciate this opportunity for this informational hearing. It means a lot. I'm here with folks from my district, and I'd like to
Representative Clark, why don't
put
we
on the table, I guess?
Why don't we move the A6 amendment? Okay. I think then we would be discussing.
All right.
Representative Clark would like to move the A6 amendment to get the amendment in the shape you would like. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, you have your bill in the shape you'd like, and we're just going to have an informational hearing.
Exactly.
Hearing. Welcome, and welcome, council member. Do you want to identify yourself for the record?
If I could.
Representative Clark.
I just want to give a little background about this first. What you have before you is a bill. It's called Amortization Prohibited. Basically, it's ungrandfathering a couple of facilities in my neighborhood, and that's where people are going to be testing about today. It allows our city, and you'll hear from our city council member, allows them to help us move those out. And what I want to talk to you about very briefly is I want to show you why we need this. It's going to take about 1 minute to do a little show, and I hope you can hear me.
You're coming across very well, Representative Clark, and you're on TV this morning, so you may have to stay relatively close. Maybe the pages could help move it over so that it'll show up.
Mr. Chair, what we have here is a map of what I would call environmental justice. It's why we have a law in the books that says this particular neighborhood has a special law. I'm just going to go through with you very briefly why we have this law. This is a map of Hennepin County, and the shading here is based on what's called minority population. I can tell you that we've had the same map that is based on, this is minority according to the census, U.S. Census description minority. The same map, if it had income, would be almost exactly the same. Our distribution of minority population and income is almost exactly the same. Hennepin County. So this bill is about this neighborhood called Phillips Neighborhood, which is right here. And what we did on this map was documents some of the particular health problems that people have who live in this neighborhood related to environmental exposures. This area was designated an arsenic Superfund site, residential Superfund site, as well as because of a factory that was there no longer. It was gone in the 60s. Arsenic was released from that factory. It's all over the ground here. And these little spots here, these are all places where the soil was taken off of our yards. My front yard and my two side yards, for example, were removed because of the arsenic contamination. And you can see there were 500 yards. This is depicting that, majority of it right there in Phillips neighborhood. This is a map that shows the incidence of childhood lead poisoning in our community. We don't have so much lead in our in products anymore, but it was in our paint and it was in our gasoline. This is a community right here. All of these dots here represent children who, and this is a toddler's disease, who had childhood lead poisoning and needed intervention. It was at a high enough level that they needed to have intervention, medical intervention. This shows you where how that shows up on the map in Phillips neighborhood. The number of children, the concentration of children with childhood lead poisoning. This is Phillips neighborhood. There's the north side. If we were, they would have a similar situation. One of the common illnesses related to environmental exposure is asthma. We have a lot of sources of asthma, but it's one of the reasons we're here today. So there's airborne issues. These are asthma hospitalizations or emergency room visits. These aren't people who live with asthma. These are people who have enough asthma incidences that, and this is all came from our county and our state health department. You can see here those three examples, and there are others. This is why we have an issue with the air and the soil and some of the issues of disproportionate toxic exposure. The rest of Hennepin County is out here. This is my neighborhood, and that's why we're here today.
Thank you for that background information, Representative Clark. Go ahead. Or council member, are you ready?
Yes, thank you. Good morning.
If you could identify yourself for the record.
My name is Alondra Cano, and I'm the 9th Ward council member for the city of Minneapolis, also representing this neighborhood where my children are also growing up, probably developing asthma as we speak.
Council member, I got to interrupt you.
Yes.
With that accent, that's just unbelievable. So from someone who worked a lot with Hispanic people,
I love
the accent. Can I ask you where it came from?
I actually moved to this country when I was 10, and I moved to Meeker County, to Litchfield, Minnesota. So Dean Erdahl is my parents' representative, and went to school with a lot of the kids of the reps who used to represent the Litchfield area.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So I'm here in support of this proposal and this bill because this community needs our support. Not only is it overburdened with being an arsenic triangle, a Superfund site, an asthma cluster, it's also a racially concentrated area of poverty as designed by the Met Council. So the folks in this community need our support. They need our help. The city of Minneapolis needs the partnership of the state in order to fulfill our vision of growing our city, as our mayor has set forward, and also to develop innovation districts around green zones. So we want to promote jobs, but we want them to be green jobs. We want to promote solar panel, geothermal energy. We want to make sure that this area turns around. Over time, as we have seen in this map, this neighborhood has been dumped on over and over and over. The community is here, standing behind me, supporting this initiative. They will speak and share their stories about why this is important. And for us, this is a conversation about engaging our partners and doing a relocation transition. We don't want to shut down any companies. We don't want to take jobs away from anyone. We want to have a conversation about how does this community transition in the next 5 years, using this bill as an opportunity to allow the city to actually fulfill and implement its current zoning. As we speak, this area has zoning that has been downgraded to not allow the current uses that it has. However, because of this grandfathered law, those illegal uses are actually allowed by the state. And so what we're asking is for your help and your support in allowing the city to fulfill our current zoning standards, which would eventually phase out the industrial pollution uses that are here. But we're also offering ourselves as a partner in this work to help these businesses and the area that will be impacted to transition out, move out, relocate. We're currently working with another company that has come forward to say, we want to work with you. How can we get this done? Where can we go?
Council member, thank you, and appreciate you coming in. Representative Clark, why don't we have one or two people just give us a minute, and then I'd like to hear from someone representing the workers, and then we're going to move on to the rest of our business. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Jose Luis Villaseñor, and I'm also a resident of East Phillips. I would argue that this bill is one of the important bills out here today right now. I would argue it's one of the bills that really promotes this great country. If anything, it really promotes the fact that we are trying to identify how to push forward a healthy and safe community in our neighborhoods. Our children are growing up and developing brains, lungs, and these particular environments. And what we're saying to the capital, to give the powers of the city of Minneapolis to allow us to stop the historical industrialization of our communities. With this bill pushing it forward, it is highly important and will support a sustainable and healthy community throughout Minneapolis and become a model, as you can see in the Hennepin County, up to even North Minneapolis, and neighborhoods that are continuing to be ignored, dumped on, and forgotten. This gives us voice and direction in promoting a healthy and safe community. So I would like to see if we can support you all supporting this bill in particular. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. If you could identify yourself for the record, welcome and good morning, and thank you for coming in early.
Yes.
We'll hear from two more of you, and then we're going to move on. Thank you so much.
I'll just take a minute.
Go ahead.
My name is Carol Pass. I'm the president of the neighborhood organization in which this zoning area exists, and I'm just wanting to call your attention to, we're looking for an ungrandfathering action here. It's unique, I think, but I think the situation is unique. This has got the highest density of kids almost in the state, and they're all moving towards school age. our asthma problems and our school-age problems are very big. And we, you know, we look at kids, the asthma rate and leaving school because of it is huge. It really is one of the greatest impactors for not finishing high school, not finishing school, getting, you know, ending up on the street. I think this ends up being a crime problem. It ends up being an expensive problem. It ends up being something we really shouldn't continue. And we have to figure out. I'm concerned that grandfathering seems to be looked at as a forever deal. But, you know, think back. We were using asbestos. It was really great. It stopped fire. It was very tough stuff. It had to go. The factories had to go, too.
Thank you. If you could
so
identify,
we're looking to a change to that.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Patty Zansky, and I'm a resident of East Phillips. I'm a homeowner that I live just a few houses down from these heavy industries. I'm here to just share my grave concern about the pollution in my neighborhood. I have soot on my front porch that it blows in on the floor, the furniture, the windowsills. I try to work out. I work from home. I try to sit outside, and I get terrible headaches from the air because it smells so bad. I'd like to have children. I just got married a few years ago, and frankly, I'm concerned about raising a child with the air quality in my community. So I please ask you to hear and listen to these grave concerns and support Karen Clark with her bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Clark, do you want to hear from the workers first, and then do you want to wrap up?
Sure,
do you want to wrap
that would be
up
fine.
Now?
And I just want to say welcome
go
to
ahead.
Them. We've had some ongoing conversations with the union members there, and as Councilmember Cano said, we're not interested in costing jobs, but we want to hear the voices of folks who are concerned about that.
Thank you. If you could identify yourself, for the record, timeout. Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, maybe I had missed it, but the basic premise of this, let me just clarify, since we didn't have the bill, is the point that there are some industries that were grandfathered in and
exactly.
haven't been permitted for the level of pollution, or what is the basic issue here?
I'm sorry if I wasn't clear
Clark.
Enough. There are two industries that are right now in what is now a highly residential area. When they were originally there, and the reason they're grandfathered in, it was a much more of an industrial area. Now, this is one of the densest population areas in the city. Lots of children and lots of problems, as this depicts here. I didn't even do ADHD and some of the issues that are related to neurological damage that comes from air pollution, but you know, we could put that on a map too. So the idea is to give the city the authority to help them move on whatever they need to do to assist that.
Representative Hausman.
And just to clarify, so they are when you say grandfathered in, does that mean they are operating without a permit, or what? Grandfathered in from what?
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hausman, they are the city ordinance allows them to stay there, and the permit. Actually, the permit is in process. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is about to go through another whole permitting process with these folks. But from what we've been able to tell so far. We have to use the specific law that this map depicts in order to deal with that, because one industry all by itself may meet a threshold that's okay, but when you put one thing on top of the other, and that's how you end up with the kind of situation we're in today.
And Representative Clark, what you have is a couple of businesses that are what considered non-conforming.
Non-conforming legal use at
ordinance
this time.
Wouldn't allow, or current zoning ordinance wouldn't allow, but because they've been there for a long, long time, as I remember in college
yes.
in the neighborhood, that was much more heavy industry than it is currently today, and we're transitioning, but we want to allow these businesses to do and have jobs there, and that's the challenge we have, because they're not consistent with the way we envision things today, but at the same point, they're there, they're doing mm-hmm. their work, and so that's the challenge we have. Welcome to the committee, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Edward Reynoso. I'm the political director for Teamsters Joint Council 32. We represent 62,000 plus active and retired members in the state of Minnesota, of which 60 plus happen to work at one of the companies, businesses adjacent to or in this area, Smith Foundry. I can tell you that we have an employer here that does a phenomenal job and has a great record of safety. And although Sister Mary Asuncion, when I was a kid, told me that I needed to pay attention more in science, I didn't think it would ever come in handy, and I wish I had that today. I wish I would have paid a little more attention. But with that said, I pay attention to facts. And the facts are that this employer and many of the other employers that are in the area are not the pollutants that have created this mess here. I think this is horrible. And I could go on, I'd like to go on record and saying something needs to be done here. But I can tell you, Smith Foundry is not the doer of what you see on that map. I operate off facts because there was a Minnesota Pollution Control Agency thorough study done, and you all should have a copy of it, and it proves that the pollutants are no different in this area than they are in other areas. And we have an employer here that it not only is very cognizant of being a good neighbor, being a good member of the community, has opened his doors and has welcomed this organization and its residents on tours, and has complied with every single aspect of being a good neighbor and being a non-pollutant. We have over 60 members that work at Smith Foundry. Over a third of them live within a 2-mile radius. So this employer is it's very important to hire people within the community. About of the 60 plus, probably about 30 or so are people of color, which is really important. This is an idea company, an idea business that we need in our communities.
Mr. Renosa, I appreciate you coming forward, and I wanted to give both sides an opportunity. I think this shows some of the challenges, and I really appreciate your, I don't know if you would call it the company that employs your members. I'm trying to think of the relationship, how you say that. And if I'm not mistaken, both of the major employers that we're talking about here, your workers, if I'm not mistaken, the other business also has some of your workers, I believe, with that. There's a foundry and a bituminous company, and if I'm not mistaken, don't you represent employees at both places, or am I wrong on that?
Mr. Chair, we do. Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
We do have some members in the other plant also.
Okay, and what I want to say is it is so important that we allow people to be close to their work. And the opportunity to have good-paying jobs close to your work and to allow people. This area has really transitioned from what it was as I was a college student living in the area. And I appreciate that, and I have watched the change there, and it's been very positive. And I understand, Representative Clark, I worked with you when we did the arsenic and got the soil out of those people's yards. I didn't realize it was including your own.
Yep.
And I think we need to have non-conforming allowances. These people were there for a long, long time, these businesses, doing good work. And I would encourage the owners of those businesses, like you have shown, your willingness to work with the neighbors and understand their concerns. They're no different than any neighborhood you live in, and some of us are blessed that we don't have some of the challenges that other folks have, and then we have different challenges. So thank you both. Representative Clark, this is an issue that's going to continue to have discussion. Thank you for representing the workers, and we're going to continue to move on. And thank you, Council Member, for coming forward, and for all of you getting up so early in the morning to come over to St. Paul. And welcome back to your community later today. Is there any members that have any questions? Mr. Renoso, I did cut you off, so I'm going to let you finish.
Real quick, this is a business that was there at the turn of the century. And one last thing I want to point out is that we've heard a lot of conversation this year in this body about providing a second opportunity for convicted felons. This employer takes pride in offering people a second opportunity in life. So this is an ideal employer that we need in our communities and that we must have in our communities to make it vibrant. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Clark. Closing comments.
Okay. So I just want to remind people what we're doing here is this bill would allow the city to take the actions to deal with the ordinance. So, again, it's a community that's gone through a huge transition. Now residential, used to be much more industrial. And I do want to say that we have worked with the employer of one of these businesses, the foundry. We've not had that kind of cooperation from Bituminous Roadways. But I do want you to know that there's a special law that governs this because there is this disproportionate impact on low-income people and people of color. So any one industry, it's true, not any one industry is the source, but when you add layer upon layer upon layer, then there's a different standard that is applied by state law to this area. So we just want to allow the city to go ahead and use that.
Thank you. And Representative Clark, to allow the testimony to happen today, I needed you to move the amendment, but now I need you to withdraw the
I will. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate it. We agreed that this would be an informational hearing. I hope it's been helpful to people. I want to withdraw the amendment, and I very much appreciate that. This sets the stage for the next step that we need to take in our community.
Thank you. Representative Clark. Okay, members, we're going to move on and thank everyone for your patience on that issue. Representative Fabian, we'll start with your A3 amendment. And members, we have them all in the packet. And please, any members, raise your hand. If I forget for some reason, I will try and ask every time if someone in the audience wants to speak for or against an amendment. But if you're wanting to speak for or against an amendment and you have something new to add that's not been discussed before, move down towards the testifying table. And I do not want to hear testimony that you've already given in the committee. Please, I don't want anybody to repeat what you've already said, and I will gavel you down if you're repeating what's already been said. If you have something new to add, I'm not talking about the members, I'm talking about the audience. I won't gavel down a member for telling us their opinion. Sorry. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe just as a process thing, a number of these relate to the agencies, and if the agencies, rather than after each amendment, us calling down the agency, if we can get the agencies to kind of be on deck to give their position, that may make things go a little smoother, because we want to see where they are on these.
And we've got Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner Kadalka, Assistant Commissioner Meyer, director here, and is Bowser also here? Is Mr. Jack? Okay, we're here too. Okay, so as need, you, Mr. Seifert, you can come down as needed. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A3 amendment has to do with situations that can occur where a business or a hospital or whatever, for example, they may have multiple standby generators on their facility, and an honest mistake, they don't get one of the generators permitted. What I would like to do is be able to allow for the business or the county or the city that has a standby generator or something like that, where they self-report to MPCA and say, hey, we've not done this, we want to make sure that we're doing everything correctly. Basically, what I want to do is just delay the enforcement for 90 days and make sure that in case of an honest mistake, I'll say that the penalties are waived as well for, you know, allowing businesses and so forth to come forward and say, I just want to do this right. I don't want any problems. We didn't get it permitted. We'd like a little mercy, and I'm giving them a little legislative support with that.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. We'll hear from the agency. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I have with me our Division Director for Industrial Permits, who can speak to this issue.
Director, welcome. If you could identify yourself.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. Jeff Smith. I'm the Director of the Industrial Division at the PCA. So this is, a conversation that we've had for a few times, and I know that Representative Fabian has got some specific thoughts about this particular facility and what happened up there. I think there's a couple of things I'd like to say. I can talk specifically about that facility and that event, but I think more importantly, let's spend a lot of time talking about this particular bill. I think a couple of things to note is that the agency has been doing compliance enforcement activities around the state for many years. We are very respected around the nation from EPA, around our compliance enforcement activities. We have worked really hard to sort of educate and provide information to regulated parties when they need assistance. For DigiKey itself, I don't want to take, I don't want to argue with Representative Fabian, but he and I have talked about this particular facility for a few years now. And it's our opinion that they did not self-report, so this particular piece,
Director Smith,
doesn't apply here.
If it's okay, I would rather speak to the amendment
okay.
than the specific incident. And if you can speak to the amendment, and then if there's a need to speak about the specific incident, I'd rather just speak to the amendment.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps I'll
Ms. Gauthier.
Talk more to the amendment. First of all, this amendment, it is to a specific incident in a specific place. And I know that in my experience at the legislature here, it's not always been a great precedent for putting something into statute. But that said, this would basically, if we had a compliance agreement with someone and they realized at the end of that agreement period that they had not done the actions that we had told them to, then they could call us and, in effect, long story short, I'm summing up, have another 90 days. That it does have exemptions on the back on line 2.7, 2.9, and 2. and so forth. But, it has an exemption for serious harm or imminent or substantial endangerment to human health or the environment. But our question is, what does that, who would be there to define at what point the harm becomes serious? Or at what point, serious to who? So it's vague, the exception, and overly broad, I think. And also we're not clear about subdivision 4 on page 2.1 seems to allow us to do many of the things that would be, we would be prohibited from doing in 90 days in subdivision 2. And also, Mr. Chairman, we already have two programs at the PCA whereby people can voluntarily come forward and tell us, ask for help, one of which was enacted in 2012, and I believe it was Representative Torkelson's bill because I worked on it with him. And that allowed any entity to come to the PCA, and we would give them an advisory audit or inspection of what they feared they had a problem with or were concerned about, and then they would have a period of time to correct that we would work with them during that period of time. And so I think that the ends that are trying to be reached by this bill already exist in law, and then I think this bill has problematic language.
Director Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, I think it's also important to note that these facilities, we're not escalating right away to enforcement action. Our goal has always been compliance. And I think one important message here is what you're sending to the rest of the regulated community out in the world, whether it's industries or municipalities or individuals, self-reporting is a key part of the work of the agency, and as Greta mentioned, we've got programs that allow people to get in and self-report and do audits with us. I would be worried about the message we're sending for the rest of the regulated community, who have been doing it well for many, many years. We've got compliance rates over 90%. Most folks are trying to do the right thing, and they do the right thing. I think the message you're sending here is the folks that maybe are not doing the right thing get a break. And that doesn't seem like that should be fair for us as a regulator or the person doing the regulations and the folks that are being regulated. There's a leveling of the playing field, so to speak, that I think is really important here. And that's kind of our overall goal. And this particular bill unlevels that playing field in our estimation and causes folks that have not done the planning up front that's required and puts the folks that have done that planning at an economic disadvantage.
Mr. Chairman, we have consulted since we saw this amendment last night, have consulted with some of our legal staff who are looking into it, but we're concerned that this would be in conflict with federal law, federal requirements.
Thank you. A couple things, members, and to the audience. We have worked through, and we actually can stay in this room until noon. We were able to, Ms. Sipko was able to do some finagling after I think we didn't get to keep our room earlier in the week, so we were able to, there's an important ag hearing that normally would be in this room, but they're able to accommodate the larger room in room 10 because Representative Cornish doesn't need the room in his committee. So with a little bit of moving around, we all get to stay here until noon if it takes that long to get through our bill. I think that also works with those of you that need to get over this to the Senate, because I believe the Senate is going to begin to work on their environment bill at noon. So it kind of all fits together. So sometimes things do work out here. So that's where we're at. I know that leads to some other challenges. Specifically, we've got some folks that are supposed to be somewhere at 10 o'clock. So we're going to try and be through this thing as fast as we can still, but be respectful. And then we may even have to take a short recess when it comes time to bunch some votes together, because Representative Hornstein, I, Representative Cornish, are supposed to be in another committee at a certain time to vote there. In Representative Hornstein's case, I believe it's the committee you're the lead on, is that omnibus bill is happening. So please, I ask for your flexibility to make sure that members want to be here for votes. We will certainly make sure that they are. I know it's also challenges for Representative Hancock, so we've got some things that we're going to try and work through. So there's definitely still a chance that we will be back later this evening or tomorrow to make sure that everyone gets a chance to vote on this bill. I don't want somebody to not have a chance to vote on the bill. To that point, Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, so as we're going through, I appreciate the flexibility to make sure we can get folks here, because I know with the avian influenza, we have members that will be over at that. And we will want to be roll calling some of these amendments, so just to make sure the flexibility is there to get people.
Well, and to that point, Representative Hansen, Representative Poppy is the lead on that committee that's having that real important hearing. Representative Fabian, I know you're on the committee. I don't know if any other, I don't believe any. Oh, Representative Rarick, aren't you on that committee also? In
no.
Ag?
No.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. So you're going to be there also. So we have a number of folks. It's a joint committee, so if you're on Ag Policy or Ag Finance. So I want to be respectful. So if members see folks getting up and leaving, it's because they're trying to be in two places at one time. So anything more on that, on our planning as we go forward? Please be flexible, because there's still a great chance, depending on how the discussion goes, that we'll be back later tonight after floor session to finish, or we will be back here tomorrow after floor session, depending on how things go as we try and accommodate those folks that need to be in different places also. And then to that point, I believe, is there anyone in the audience who wants to speak for or against the A3? Mr. Quillis. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Quillis is coming forward. You know, I guess I'm disappointed in the agency at this point. I didn't want this to become some sort of a specific issue. But as long as they mentioned DigiKey, this did happen in my district. And what I was doing was trying to create a little bit of a safety net for hardworking, honest people, whether it's a hospital or a school district or a business, to try to be able to do the right thing and come forward and admit that there is some paper mistake going on here. You folks need to know that this company self-reported on this standby generator. The agency came in and did a thorough investigation, and they didn't find anything wrong. Nothing. Everything that they were doing met all of the rules that they had, except for one little tiny thing about some sort of gaining some sort of an economic or competitive advantage over their competitors. And folks, they fined them $25,000, okay, for not having a piece of paper in a file someplace, because they didn't have their standby generator, one of them, and they have multiple units on the facility. That's why this amendment is such a great idea. I want to send a message to hardworking, honest people around the state, not vast polluters. There's safety nets built into this amendment on the back page for serious violations, where the agency can continue to do what they need to do. And I would encourage support of the amendment, please.
Anything to add, Mr. Quillis?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And just to echo some of Representative Fabian's comments, And I apologize, I missed a little bit of Ms. Gauthier's and Mr. Smith's testimony, but the intent of this was, as they pointed out, there is an existing language right now, an environmental audit program that you can go through and trigger, if you will, with the agency to go through and have them audit your facility. If they find something, you are then allowed to use the 90-day delay. But the problem is you have to be in that audit to be able to use that 90-day. This is just another option. A lot of this language that's in the A3 is duplicative of what's in 114C.20, which is just above this in statute. It just carries it over and says that if you self-report a minor violation, what DigiKey aside, what we're trying to talk about is a minor violation. It's you have 90 days to do something. It's day 91. You have six generators. You reported only on five. It's a minor violation that allows you that you report within 48 days to go through and then file a report with the commissioner to go through and how you would fix that. You have to report it. If you look on lines starting on 1.13, you have to self-report it. It has to be within 48 hours. It has to be you can't have had a previous violation within 2 years, and you have to work in writing with the commissioner to go through. Then you can trigger the 90 days. On the back side of the A3, if it is a major violation, anything to do with criminal penalties, serious harm, human health, you violate a stipulation agreement, you can't use this. And that's determined by the agency. And also at the end, when it talks about you cannot use this and clarifies that you cannot use this to alleviate yourself of any reporting, releases, violations, and other matters. So, again, this is just picked up from existing statute just in front of it. The only trigger here is whether you're in the audit program or whether you self-report. Mr. Chairman, I stand for any questions.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Quillis, I just wanted the first part of your testimony, you said 48 days, and then you came back and said 48 hours. I just want to clarify that that's that.
Hours,
and
Mr.
it may work to have an oral amendment to make it two business days. We've talked about that, too. So, thank you.
Representative Fabian, do you want to move an oral amendment?
I would, Mr. Chair, yes. On line 1.17, I would like to strike the 48 hours and insert two business days.
Mr. Eloff, do you want to read back the amendment as it would say now?
Yes, Mr. Chair. On line 1.17, clause 2, the regulated entity notified the commissioner of the violation within two business days of it coming to the regulated entity's attention.
Discussion to the oral amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The oral amendment's adopted. The amendment's now in the shape Representative Fabian would like. Further discussion. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may have misunderstood the department, but I thought they were suggesting there was some language on page 2 that seems to give them authority to do something that they now currently couldn't do under 90 days. And I mean, I think that would was probably inadvertent drafting or something, but unless I misunderstood it, when they were referencing the second page, that they seemed to suggest confusion about the language because it seems to allow them to do something that they aren't, that they don't currently do.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hausman. Yes, the language in the bill under subdivision 4 seems to our reading to conflict with what is written in subdivision 2. That's one problem. The other problem is on line 2.7, for example. The other problem is the exceptions are vague. On line 2.7, what is serious harm? So are they going to call the sheriff out to decide whether or not the harm is serious, or are we supposed to come to wherever, War Road or Worthington or something? I mean, we don't see how this could work because it would be the permittee who would be deciding that the problem doesn't cause harm to people or the environment. And we're not sure that would meet what numerous federal and state, descriptions in statute and rules say about what is harmful to people
and what is harmful to the environment. So it just seems unworkable to us.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I
Mr. Quillis.
Saw Ms. Taylor make her move for the statutes because I think that this language in Subdivision 4 is existing law.
Okay, we'll get an answer on that. Are you ready, Ms. Taylor? Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, the exceptions in Subdivision 4 of the A3 amendment are, if not similar, exactly the same as those that are in 114C.24 Subdivision 3. So, and if you were to look at there, there's also serious harm and all these similar terms. So.
So if I understand what Ms. Taylor is saying, it's not exactly word for word, but it's pretty much what's in current law. Representative Hausman.
Then I'm even more confused, Mr. Chair, because then I wonder why would we repeat it if this is already existing?
I'm wondering why the agency isn't down here to say that they wanted to fix current law instead of complaining about current law. I'm getting more understanding of why the amendment's before us. So, Director Smith, I hope you can add something.
Mr. Chair, I'll certainly try. I think one of the things that's important is when the question gets asked. I think a scenario that is likely under this particular bill is that let's say, for instance, we show up to do an inspection the day of, and at that point, the company announces that they're going to self-disclose some violation, what they believe to be minor, which we're not exactly sure what insignificant or minor might be, and then claim protection under this particular statute. What's envisioned with the audit program is a scenario by which the company comes ahead to the agency to work through issues and concerns and questions they have well ahead of any potential enforcement action that comes before us. If we're into an enforcement action, we're doing environmental audits at a facility, that's the point where, in our mind, we've moved from, not that we're still not going to provide assistance, but we moved from a regulatory side into the regulatory side from the assistance side. So again, we believe that this particular bill is unnecessary. There are protections, and companies have the availability to engage with us to work through and get protection under the audit program. But there's a point where we think this language is unnecessary and confusing.
Director Smith, this is a company located, I didn't know the company, I represent Fabian, I didn't actually think somebody mentioned their name till you did. But they got 6 backup generators. One of them acts up, and we got to go up there and hassle a company that's considering whether they should be in North Dakota, Iowa, or what's the other state trying to get them? South Dakota. I think that they're doing a phenomenal business, hiring all these local people. And I'm sorry, you're down here trying to defend why it doesn't seem like. I'm sorry, we can't legislate common sense. But this kind of action, just common sense doesn't dictate. And you're down here trying to defend. We find out most of what's in there. Some of it's already in current law. Instead of saying, you know what, why don't we just put the amendment on, which we're going to do for sure. I can tell you that right now. And then you guys try and figure it out. If you want to figure it out in the next couple hours, I don't have any problem with that. But I'm so frustrated with the agency. Why in the world? This is a terrific company doing great things. It reminds me of the other backup generator. It was a biodigester where some egg producer was using a diesel engine, I call it a diesel engine, to take cow manure and make it into electricity, and we're hassling them because of the air emissions coming out of it. This is similar to that. It's a backup generator so these people can do this terrific, innovative idea this guy had to refurbish computers, and in Timbuktu, he's doing it up in God's country up there, and here we are trying to defend why we want to say something we did makes sense. It was a huge mistake what we did, and we should be working with this company and Representative Fabian to fix it. I'm sorry. I'm frustrated. You wonder why our bill is written the way it is, and you come down here and try and defend action like this. This is ridiculous. Hassle a company like that. Who's the next one you're going to hassle? Representative Hausman, are you done? I'm sorry.
Yes,
Representative Dill.
Thank you. Well, I spent 35 years flying people around the world, and we have a so there is a allowance in FAA law rules that unless there's a death, injury, or material damage to an aircraft, that you have a get-out-of-jail-free card by self-reporting. And then you have to go into a remedial an action where you explain how you won't violate that rule again. But they can't take any action against you. They can't fine you. Now, there's a finite, I don't remember, because I've never used it in 35 years. But I know people who have. And, I mean, things do happen. I agree with you, Representative McNamara. Let's pass the amendment.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple questions. One, was this a bill? Was there a bill introduced on this? Or
I don't know if it's a bill, Representative Hansen. It's a very good idea. Representative Fabian.
I did not introduce this as a bill, no.
Representative Hansen.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And my reason for asking that is, you know, we've got some civil penalties in here, and, you know, the merits of it we're debating here as we're going through an omnibus bill, but I'm not sure if adopting this, if that requires the whole bill to go to civil law, because we've got civil penalties under the rules. I don't know if you've talked to that chair, or I just don't know what's if there'd been a bill, maybe it could have made those routes and some of this some of the questions and the confusion that's coming up right now could have been resolved. So you know, I understand the empathy for the company, but also the future and looking at how this applies, we could have fleshed out maybe if it was out as a bill form and gone through the Civil Law Committee.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Hansen, and we will check with the chair to see if he wants to hear the bill, and if he wants to hear the bill, we'll either go there or remove that part of the amendment. Any further discussion to the A3? All those in favor say aye.
Excuse
aye.
Me.
Mr. Chair.
That's okay.
No, I'm sorry. There was. Go ahead. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very briefly to the agency. You referenced the advisory inspections portion of law that was put into place a couple of years ago. How often is that utilized?
Director Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, not very often.
Have you,
Representative
Chair, have you made any effort to make companies aware that this procedure is available?
Director Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. Part of our outreach to companies when we're out there doing inspections is to present to them these options, including that advisory.
Well, the whole idea here is
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, is that we quit playing gotcha and work with companies that want to do the right thing and not penalize them for not doing their paperwork. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor of the A3 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Amendments adopted. Next, we have members the A24. Representative Uglem, I believe you're offering the A24.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Relatively simple amendment with regard to recycling. The Recycling Competitive Grant Program. If you'll look at page 89.
24.
I hope everyone has it in their packet.
Members, it's the A24 amendment. And members, that would be in the packet that's labeled today. Some of you may have kept some of your items in the save file, and it's in the today packet. Members, if it happens, both our pages are here. So once in a while, if you don't have the amendment when we move it, why don't you raise your hand, and they'll bring it to any members that... as we try and we've tried to not duplicate too much paperwork, but once in a while we may be missing something. It's a relatively short amendment. It has 7 lines.
Yes.
Representative Uglem, why don't you begin to explain it? I think there's at least a couple members that don't have it. We'll make sure they get it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, the semantics on page 89.22, we're deleting the word or. And on 89.23, we are adding, at the end of that sentence, the word or, and then we're saying the development or expansion of local recycling systems to support recycling bulk materials, including but not limited to electronic waste. So we're simply expanding the scope of some of this recycling which is needed, very much needed in the waste stream, and we all know about electronics that need to be taken care of.
Representative Uglem, we're going to take a deep breath because it almost looks like the entire left side of the testimony table doesn't have the amendment. So if one of the pages could make sure this is in regards to the new program that we've created to encourage rural recycling is the part of the bill that Representative Uglem is talking about. It's on page 89. And then I want to make sure that everyone has the A24 before we totally get into discussing it. Okay. We actually hit it, Representative Purcell, intentionally on your entire side of the room there to see if people were paying attention.
Watch you like the hawk, hang
on. Okay, I think we're good. Discussion to the A24, this is as Representative Uglem put it. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I obviously, if we can expand recycling in terms of materials and the geographic scope, you know, that's a very good thing in principle. And, you know, I applaud that. I guess it would be helpful to hear from folks that might be directly affected, either, you know, the counties or the PCA that are involved in, you know, administering these kinds of programs, just to make sure that they're okay with it. You know, again, coming as an amendment, again, as I say, in principle, it sounds good, but, you know, we do have people that are responsible for the implementation, and I think it might be good to very briefly hear from them about this.
I think that's a good idea. Director Benke, Commissioner Kadelka, did you want to speak? I think Representative Hornstein, it's been a challenge for some of the rural communities to deal with the bulk material recycling, and so the idea that
down below
Representative Uglem is bringing forward, I think, is one that's a good idea. We'll see. Apologize. I guess a lot of folks didn't have the amendment. Representative Kadelka. I'm sorry, Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The Greater Minnesota Grant Program, adding on, be good to have a better understanding of bulk materials, but adding more recycling to the program is good. What we wouldn't want this to be is the answer to reforming e-waste program. There is an e-waste program currently out there, and that needs to be reformed, which would help greatly with the need in the counties being able to collect what they're doing now. We just can't allow this to be a substitute, but building it for those other bulk materials is an important effort too.
And Commissioner Kadelka, I think that's a good point to make. And members, we will be back here next year working on e-waste. There's challenges in the law we passed in how it's working as that all evolves, and new computers are lighter and older ones are heavier, and those are some of the challenges we have to work on that issue. Additional discussion to the A24? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A24 is adopted. Members, I'll try and slow down. I got a little excited there. So, okay. Members, the next one is the A38. And after that, just I'm going to try and tell folks which ones are on deck. It would be the A26. But members, we are on the A38. This replaces the A5. And I believe this is a Representative Neuberger amendment. Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is the, after hours of toil, this is the new and improved, almost world's greatest amendment. It is 99.9% perfect. There is one typo that we'll need to correct. It is on line 1.8.
Representative Neuberger moves the following oral amendment.
It instead of reading November 1st, it should have read November 15th. In the very late hours of the night in our smoke-filled room, we forgot to push the number 5.
Okay. We'll just incorporate that into your amendment. But I think we should have DNR, either director or commissioner, or you want to speak to it or just wave, or what are your thoughts on it? Director, why don't you come down if you could identify yourself for the record. Representative Neuberger, you better explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, since it's almost the world's greatest amendment, I suppose I should. What this does is three things. First of all, it allows folks that are irrigating their land to continue to do so until November 15th. Gives them a little bit extra time. In my district, that's an important thing. Folks need, they've got cover crops or they're planting wheat. They need to do that. With a little discussion, we changed it a little bit to, so that's only agricultural land with a crop, so people are just aren't out there watering barren land. When I spoke to the agency folks, they were pretty good with that. The second part is the deleted lines on 1.123 to 1.126, and that. We've got a little disagreement here. There's my opinion, which I favor, and then there's the agency's opinion, which I don't favor. And it all boils down to whenever you're going to have an interference issue, an inventory needs to be made of existing wells that are within 1 to 1.5 miles of the proposed site. At this point in the game, if you're the property owner, you got to go to all your neighbors and figure out who's got wells and get that information from them. Obviously, if there's any bad blood between neighbors, people can make your day really bad, and it can make it very difficult to get an inventory if the onus is on you, the property owner. I think it's by far a better solution to have a neutral entity, i.e. the agency, go ahead and do that. I spoke with the agency folks last night, and they weren't real excited about it. However, I am very excited about it. And the third change is down on the bottom, 2.27 is the part where the we changed this as well, where the commissioner shall not validate a well interference claim instead of paying out. The agency very kindly corrected my ignorance in this issue and informed me that the commissioner doesn't write checks, that he or she simply validates the claims. And basically what it says is that a claim won't be validated if the person, if one of the parties go ahead and seals their well before the investigation is complete. That kind of throws that throws things off a little bit. So we're just saying that if you're gonna have a problem, don't seal your well until it's been validated. So with that, members, this is the world's greatest, almost world's greatest amendment, and I turn it over to you.
Thank you, Representative Neuberger. Director Skinner, you want to identify yourself for the record and speak to the amendment.
Mr. Chair, my name is Luke Skinner. I'm the Director for the Division of Ecological and Water Resources at the DNR. Mr. Chair, for the first one, we're fine with. For the second one, on the well interference, we're okay with the department doing that, just to let you know that it's going to be an increased effort for the DNR and might slow things down. This is a big new effort that we'll have to take on with hundreds of wells out there for our staff to go out and do the same work. It's just to understand there's a cost to it, and that it's going to be our big concern too back for the permittees is always the concern of time, right? So now we're staying our staff out there that are doing multiple permits, hundreds of permits around the state. So it's just an additional cost and effort and may slow down the permit process. And so we're okay with taking it on, but just to know that that's an effort that we're going to have to beef up to do, and there may be some funding required to do that.
Well, Director, I'm encouraged for you to say that, because I know this has been a tough issue that we've been working on for the last 3-4 months, and I'm glad to hear you say it. There's a lot more involved in this in trying to figure out, and granted, much of these records are with the Department of Health, but sometimes they're not. So thank you for your willingness to work on this. And to the third part of the amendment?
Mr. Chair, the biggest challenge with this one is twofold. One is that when you have a domestic well interference and the well is bad, typically the well driller wants to seal the well right then and there because of the cost of mobilization. So if they can't seal it right then when you have a bad well, then that takes away their opportunity to make a claim. So that's just one of the challenges of doing that. We do that. We can also do other wells. We can put an ob well in or some other monitoring wells to look to see if there is impact as well. So all this happens. The Department of Health requires that the wells be sealed if they're not in use. And so that we'll have to look at that statute as well. So there's this timing issue. Right now, well drillers are trained and coached to go out there and try to seal these wells right away. So it's a whole new education effort that's going to have to happen with the groups out there about how they do this. And the last is an impact to domestic wells. So if they do have an interference and it is sealed, then they don't have any recourse to get reimbursed for a challenge if they do seal the well. So with and those mines.
Director Skinner, current law requires a well to be sealed within 6 months. Is that what current law is if you're abandoning a well?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure of the actual date, but that could be correct.
Okay. If I'm not mistaken, there's some time that allows that there. And my experience, closing a well is a relatively inexpensive thing, a few hundred dollars oftentimes for a residential well. But drilling a new well can be $5,000-$10,000, and we don't want to encourage less than honest well drilling and immediately sealing. That I am thinking this through in my mind, and I don't want to encourage or even allow that opportunity. And I know this, we're trying to deal with that challenge that's before us. And so I appreciate the agency's willingness to work on that. Representative Purcell, Representative Johnson, I'm sorry, I think you might have been first then.
Thank
Purcell.
You, Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to speak to the lines 1.23 through 1.26. And Representative Neuberger, there's another way to look at that. And this committee has heard me talk about the efforts taken by the mining companies just north of Mankato. And one of the, there's value. At least I have a perception that there's value when in the case of the mining companies, and I know the situation may be different, and the situations are different, but what's similar, I think, is that there's value when those seeking the permit to extract the water work with the folks who have wells near that, work themselves with the folks who have wells near there. Relationships are built. Decisions are made. There's a communication that is developed through that process that, if done well, can build positive relations and allow these entities to both parties to be well served. And I'm afraid that when you insert the DNR into that process, we may be losing some of that value. And it's kind of a matter of citizens and working together to get the job done and to do it right. And that's my fear with this. And I think that served, at least in my communities just north of Mankato, pretty well over the years.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, I like your points that you made. But again, did I say Clark?
I do the same thing. Representative Neuberger.
I'm sorry. Well, this is almost the world's greatest amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Johnson. I appreciate your comments, and as you're talking about, you know, a mining company, and that might be the dynamic that we have for a large industry such as a mining company. But what we're talking about here is these are agricultural areas. We've got communities. We've got family farms. We've got family farms that have been there, and they've got all kinds of neighbors, and there are some wells that they know about and some that they don't. And to put the onus on the private property owner, in this particular, this is what this is geared towards, to put it towards the private property owner, really complicates this, and it almost makes it prohibitive in some situations. And I know this from, because I've been dealing with a case in my own district where we had some serious issues with this exact thing. So that's what we're doing here. This is, like I said, if you're talking about heavy industry and with mines and developing relationships with the communities, there's lots of ways that they can do that. But this is really aimed at the small farmer, the people that are just trying to irrigate their land.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe Ms. Taylor can help us. How extensive does this? Is this limited to the situation that Representative Neuberger describes, or is it applied more generally?
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, it would apply to all persons or entities seeking a groundwater permit.
Representative Johnson.
Then again, I like the status quo, and I can see where there's a case where it's, I can understand where there might be a situation where communication is broken down, and then this you would be even have a stronger amendment than if where communication is demonstrated it's possible for the entities to communicate, and I can see where that situation could occur. Then we'd ask the DNR to intervene, but I think we're stronger and we have better policy if we start with the entities working with themselves and those relationships allowed to build over time. Again, a difficult process, not always easy, but valuable in the long run.
And Representative Johnson, just to put this into perspective, I heard from one person that had to deal with this issue. They were required to go talk to 27 of their neighbors about getting their private data about their well. The vast majority of that the Department of Health already had, but under the current law, they were required to go get data from 27 of their neighbors about their private well. So by the time they were going down the driveway of the sixth one, everybody was kind of wondering, what in the world's going on? And they're trying to explain, well, that's current law. So what we actually have is the situation I know, at least in far southern Minnesota, down in, I believe it is in Representative Poppy's district, a consultant is now doing that for the ag folks or for whoever's trying to do it. They've actually put together where they'll go and go talk to the 27 people for them and try and find out this information, where oftentimes the private property owners don't even know, as I alluded to earlier. So it's a challenge, and I appreciate the agency working with Representative Neuberger to find a solution, and there might be some kind of a compromise of who it all applies to. I'm thinking of the single individual one, and you're mentioning where it maybe would further relationships with an industrial user, but it doesn't say just all who it applies to. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I assume that this would, the reason for the inventory is because those other wells can be impacted. And I'll tell you, if your home well is impacted by somebody doing something drawing water, that's where we really have trouble. And if there's not, if those relationships, that's where you will, the conflict really comes. And to avoid those sorts of conflicts, the inventories have to be done. Those folks have to know that if there's the wells being drilled, that there can be impact on their wells. This is pretty near and dear to any homeowner that's in. If you've got your well dropping, and it's because of somebody else drawing water, that's a contentious situation, and those are the situations we want to avoid. So somehow that information has to be shared. Those folks need to know that this permit's being applied for, so they can at least have knowledge and perhaps weigh in on the process.
And Representative Johnson, we're not saying that we don't want that information. We're just saying who should collect it. Is the local, I think, a Solberg aggregate, and Carl's supposed to go around to the 27 people around him. And his deal is he's good at crushing rock. He's retired now, so it doesn't matter. But he's good at that. I don't know if he's good at knowing well depths and stuff. Maybe it would make more sense for a DNR hydrologist to be asked those questions based on what Department of Health records don't already have. So that's kind of where we're at in this evolving situation, as we want to have the information. You're right. Yes. I've got Representative Purcell and Representative Hansen, and it looks like Mr. Clavin's come down to testify, and then we'll move on to a vote. Representative Purcell.
I would defer to the testifier for a minute to hear what
okay.
you have to say, if you're okay with that.
Sure. Representative Hansen. Mr. Clavin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bruce Clavin speaking for the Irrigators Association of Minnesota this morning. Maybe we can help your discussion here, Mr. Chairman, on this section. We support all three sections of the Neuberger Amendment. Thank you for bringing that. We don't need to discuss Section 1. There's pieces on the valley on that. In the second discussion, members should know that all of that language from lines 1.10 on was put in 2010. We never had to do this extensive stuff before, and so our members and the department are still trying to figure out how to do all this, some of this new regime, the preliminary approval, the green light, red light, yellow light stuff, and this is all new language, so we're all getting used to this. What's being proposed down here is who should collect the data, like you said, Mr. Chairman. It isn't really about neighbor conflicts. This is about what is put on the application. And our thinking is that our neighbors, if you look on 1.25, if you went to your neighbor and said, could you give us the geologic formation, the depth of the pump, and so forth, they're probably not going to know that, because the well driller who put it in for them years ago has it. That's on file at the Department of Health. So our thinking is have the Department of Natural Resources get in touch with the Department of Health, and they can get the records from them directly. You'll also notice on here that it's not just a mile and a half. If you read it, it's or, line 1.24, or within the area of influence is determined by the commissioner. So that can be larger, potentially, there. And we just think the two departments should talk rather than have our guys go around try to figure out all this stuff that they don't have. As far as the cost, I don't know if that argument really washes, because in addition to the dedicated water appropriation fees, earlier in your bill on pages 13 and 14, there's $12 million being appropriated for a number of activities. One of them is lines 14.9, permit application review. I think the phone call to the Department of Health isn't going to be that burdensome for the cost for the Department of Natural Resources. And lastly, we've discussed a little bit the well ceiling on number three, or section three. The well ceiling is if there's an interference and someone's claiming that my well dried up because of maybe too much irrigation in the area, all we're saying there is let's have the investigation first before you seal it, because we can't test your well once it's sealed. That's what we're trying to get at there. We've had some issues with that in trying to determine who's at fault, and we can't really do that when we aren't able to test the well. And that's really sort of the issue that we're trying to get at there.
Thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in the interim here with that testimony, I've had most of my questions answered, that we have a good portion of the data on file, or should be on file, between Department of Health and Department of Natural Resources. So I concur that it seems like a good commitment.
And the challenge, Representative Purcell, is sometimes there's some older records that Department of Health doesn't have. That's, I think, the issue. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think on the bright side, I'm pleased that Representative Neuberger and your side of the aisle are referring to the DNR as a great neutral arbiter. I think we're making some progress here. It's usually not what we're hearing with the agency or any of the other agencies. I do want to just kind of follow up on Representative Johnson. And we're starting to see some amendments here that are based on an individual or an incident that happened. We've heard that with Representative Fabian and Representative Neuberger. And we get into anecdotal lawmaking. And Representative Johnson used his anecdote. So you get dueling anecdotes based on what the perception is of what happened, different opinions with one incident relating to something. I think Mr. Clavin's testimony gives some context to that and shows how input in this process based on things can have an gives us a better perception of what the interests are. But we all as legislators can use the individual anecdotes and build a bill off them, and then what is the consequence after that? What happens if it doesn't turn out, if it didn't serve as a remedy, or it does serve as a remedy for the one but not for the all? And that's where I think our role comes in asking these questions and looking at how it works. I can see just from my experience, I just tested the well on our farm, and I've been trying to find the depth information for the well, and it's hard to find some of that if it was drilled two generations ago. So I understand the frustration there, but I also think we often use, and all of us do it, we use the anecdote. And we pay for a lot of science here. We pay for a lot of research and a lot of studies, and the agencies have that at their fingertips, and we should use them as neutral arbiters to make sure that we're getting that science involved in the decision-making. So that's just an overall comment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Neuberger renews his motion on the A38 as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A38 is adopted. Members, I'm trying to be flexible here. Next, we're going to do the A15-0482, Representative Purcell. I believe that's actually your amendment. It's the A15-0482. It deletes Section 123 members on page 110 of the bill. I'll let folks move to that. And Representative Purcell, take your time, and when you're ready, go ahead. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This, as you said, deleting Section 123 is what the amendment does. So 123, if you all have that close to you there, is the wild rice water quality standards and information that's provided in 123. That says that the commissioner can't apply the existing standard for sulfate, the sulfate base standard. Two things that I'd like to say about that. And I'm going to be respectful here, but I need you all to understand, I think you do, that I represent a lot of rice beds in Minnesota. I represent a significant Native American population, Minnesota, and wild rice is a very special plant that grows on God's creation. So it's taken pretty serious. And two things I want to say is number one, there's, in my opinion, there's no need for Section 123. The Pollution Control Agency has moved forward with the standards revision, and I believe they're moving forward in a good way, and so I don't believe that it's needed for that reason. The second thing is that if we do this, and this is, we kind of had this discussion back when I believe the original bill was Representative Boleyn. I appreciate that we're using paper. I represent a lot of logging industry up there, and we're using paper and we're printing it here, but that's all we're doing, because we can pass this. It doesn't change the standard. It's an exercise, and I would offer to you that it's an exercise that is disrespectful to many of my constituents, and so that's my reason for bringing the amendment.
Representative Purcell moves the A15-0482 amendment.
Mr. Chair,
discussion.
I'd like a roll call.
Okay. Representative Purcell has asked for a roll call. Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll. I'm sorry. Somebody say it? Oh, just moving the mic. Clerk will call the roll.
McNamara.
No.
Clark.
Yes.
Cornish.
No.
Dill.
No.
Fabian. Fenton.
No.
Fisher.
Yes.
Green.
No.
Hackbarth.
No.
Hancock.
No.
Hansen.
Yes.
Houseman.
Yes.
Heintzman.
No.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
Neuberger.
No.
Purcell.
Aye.
Poppy. Rarick.
No.
Torkelson.
No.
Uglum.
No.
There being 8 ayes and 12 nays, the amendment is not adopted. I'm sorry. There being 8 ayes and 12 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Next, members, we will take up the H-846-A12 amendment, the A12 amendment. I believe Representative Hackbarth, is that your amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's my amendment.
And, members, it deals with page 7 of the bill. Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This directs $75,000 for each year of the $250,000 each year. It moves it to the DNR to we heard some testimony yesterday, Mr. Chairman, from different local units of government concerning silica mines and sand mining, and what this would do would assure that once these rules are implemented that there's someone that's going to oversee and help the local units of government in this sign mining reclamation program. And that's what this does. It specifically says that that's what's going to happen with the money. So that's why I brought the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. And I believe we have a couple of agency people here. If you want to identify yourself for the record and speak to the A12 amendment.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Will Soyford, Executive Director, Environmental Quality Board. We just have a couple of comments on the amendment.
Welcome, Director. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. It is, it's unclear in reading the amendment if it's designed to subsidize the DNR's rulemaking process or to support local government's implementation of yet-to-be-adopted reclamation rules. So if it's the former, we do have concerns about the language. The rulemakings were funded by one-time funds in 2013, so we don't support using this technical assistance fund to subsidize the agencies to finalize the actual rulemaking process. If it's the latter, supporting reclamation assistance with local governments, reclamation assistance is consistent with the intent of the fund, supporting local governments, and currently we do transfer funds to the DNR to support technical assistance. However, we do have some concerns about carving out the fund in this manner before the DNR has put a rule proposal out on public notice, because we don't know the need until the rulemaking is actually complete, and we don't know how this compares to other local government needs with respect to silica sand. So if this committee does support the amendment, I would recommend a permissive approach in the event that we don't really know what the rulemaking process is going to turn out like with reclamation. So with that, I know Mr. Richards has some concerns.
If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chair, members, Jess Richards, Director of Lands and Minerals for the DNR. Just want to echo what Director Seifert mentioned. We still are in the rulemaking process. I think it'll be more clear at the end of that process where the main technical assistance needs are going to be broadly for silica sand across all agencies. And we're working well right now with the EQB to provide technical assistance where it's needed the most. So we're not supportive right now of transferring those funds from the EQB.
Thank you. Any further discussion to the A12 amendment? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think there might be a typo on line 1.7. Shouldn't it read in a manner instead of an manner? I don't know if that
Representative Johnson, my wife would be proud of you. She's big in proper English. You're right.
Trying to.
Representative Johnson moves the technical amendment on line 1.7 to strike an, and insert a. All those in favor of that oral amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The oral amendment's adopted. To Representative Hackbar's modified A12 amendment. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, I couldn't quite hear Mr. Richards on whether the DNR did support the amendment or did not.
Director Richards.
Mr. Chair, members, we are not supportive of transferring this money.
Thank you.
And then
Representative Hansen.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. And then on Mr. Seifert's question on what the intent was, if it was the former or latter, does the maker of the amendment have input as to what his intent was? Was it to do the former or the latter with the bill?
Representative Hackbar.
Mr. Chairman, it's the latter.
Representative Hansen.
Well, then, members, I would encourage a no vote on the bill, the amendment.
Director Seifert, I would like you to put on the record, now that you understand the author's intent, where you're at on the amendment.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members, our preference would be to just leave current law as it is, because we can actually transfer funds to the DNR to support this kind of reclamation assistance as is. So our preference would be to not adopt the amendment.
Okay. Thank you. All those in favor of the A12 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
The amendment's adopted. Members, next we'll take up the A26 amendment. I believe that's a Representative Torkelson amendment. Members, it's on page 14, 15, and 25 of the bill. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A26 deals with a shift of funds from one agency to another, really with basically the same purpose in mind. And I would like to ask Ms. Taylor to explain the mechanics of the amendment.
Ms. Taylor, to the A26.
Mr. Chair, members, what the amendment would do is there's an existing rider in the bill on page 14 that provides $1 million each year to the DNR out of one of the dedicated accounts from the remediation fund for grants to soil and water conservation districts. What the amendment would do was move that rider to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and the Board of Water and Soil Resources would then be tasked with providing the grants to the soil and water conservation districts.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think it's smarter to have the money coming through Bowser than through DNR, because DNR doesn't normally distribute to the SWCDs. However, the source is still the same. You're still raiding a fund. You're still shifting it from another account. Again, where it ends up is the right place, but if you had general fund dollars, but taking it from one of the other accounts is kind of the theme in this whole bill, shifting some money from one place to another for needs. At the time, we've got a surplus. We're just taking these accounts and moving them to another place. And it looks like we've got the agencies here. I'd like them to weigh in on that.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just thought I should illuminate a little more about the reasoning behind this. I spent a little time on Summit Avenue this week talking about an issue that's been in the news quite a bit, and we're trying to put in a placeholder in the bill so that we can address that issue in the future. And the discussions up to this point have really focused on the SWCDs and their important role in addressing water quality issues, especially on the rural landscape. And this puts some funds in place to start addressing that issue in the way that we think is appropriate. I'd welcome comments from the agencies, Mr. Chair.
Well, and Representative Torkelson, I think it's important for folks to realize the governor has talked about one part of the importance of cleaning up our waters, and a very important one, that having strips of grass along waterways is a great thing. But in our bill, not only are we, and I understand that folks may not like how we got $4 million to SWCDs, but that's $4 million that the agents, that the administration didn't recommend at all. And we felt it was very important to begin to reach back and get SWCDs money so they can expand the great work they're doing on the ground. And Representative Rarick brought to my attention the importance in his district of SWCDs, and I've had a number of meetings with the SWCDs and Representative Rarick's district in how they really needed some more money. And so I appreciate Representative Torkelson's work on this issue. He's the governor. We attended a very good meeting down in Northfield where the governor specifically said one size doesn't fit all, and he understands. And I think with our, not only with Representative Torkelson's work here, but with the work at the end of our bill about a very large project potential to hold water back on the land, and the great water quality work that that could entail is really showing that we're serious about this issue. Representative Hansen, did you want to hear from the agencies first? Representative Hansen.
Just on that, I don't think I said I opposed the amendment, but I did say I opposed taking the money from another account. And $1 million here, I understand the placeholder issue. And I think I mentioned last night that the buffer initiative is important. If this is the only thing that's in the bill for the buffer initiative so that we can build on that, I understand having to have a foundation no matter how small it is. But I think Minnesotans should know the scale. So if we build one big water retention site somewhere in the state, we have invested millions already in water retention sites. If we have invested millions already in buffers, and we do elsewhere in the Clean Water Bill. So the small amounts and the districts, the need is $11 million. And we can talk about what's in the budget or not, but we have a surplus where we could invest in these things to the districts without taking it from other funds. And I'm concerned that at the end of the day, if we do one project here, one project there, or we've put some money, which is very needed, into the districts, we call that a victory, and we say that we've solved the problem. And it's really hard to get our arms around how big of an issue this is in our big, very big and very diverse state. And Representative Torkelson, I think you and I agree on some of these issues, that in that diversity of the state, we have some districts that are very functional, highly functional, that can get the projects on the ground. And we have some districts that could improve. And we've tried to build capacity in the past. But Minnesotans should know that $1 million here and $1 million there into the districts is not going to solve the problem. And taking it from other places, as we do all throughout the bill, to meet needs that are there, is not the way to go about it. And I'd like to hear from the agencies.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much. And, you know, we do recognize and appreciate the hard work the soil and water conservation districts do, but this shift of funding, we feel at this time with the budget surplus is not the right way to fund that those activities. I just want to refer you to a letter that Commissioner Landwehr sent to the committee yesterday that outlines our concerns, but it also has an attachment which contains a letter that we sent to the legislature dated August 15th, 2014, outlining our expenditures in the remediation fund as required by law. So you'll see in this letter, we're proposing to spend $522,000 in 14 and 15, which that spending is ongoing, and we would be submitting another letter for this coming biennium to appropriate those dollars. But in the past biennium or the current biennium, we spent money in the Rice Creek watershed to construct a rain garden at Lock County Park, and we're also spending money down in Blue Earth County that we received from a settlement with Magellan Pipeline for sealing of abandoned wells. So these dollars come from companies that cause environmental damage that we go through a court process to determine what that impact is, and we get a monetary settlement for the things that can't be remediated. And those dollars are used to advance environmental work throughout the state. So we have concerns about losing those types of funds to do these types of works, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Kadalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, Kirk Kadalka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And to build on the DNR's testimony, PCA is the agency that does that assessment and going through. So there are smaller cases, as mentioned, with Magellan Pipeline in Mankato, where it was MPCA staff working with the company to get those dollars to offset the environmental damage that can never be cleaned up. But there are much larger cases that this staff works on, and that funding would not be available. For instance, we are in continuing conversations with the federal government, the Department of Justice, and the Army on the Twin Cities Army Ammunition Plant and the large settlement there for the damage done to the groundwater there. In addition, we are in a support role at St. Regis and Cass Lake, working with the federal entities on damages done there. There are other cases that are also there that staff work is done that PCA and DNR would not be able to be done because the fund is not large enough to support the additional appropriation the amendment has, in addition to the ongoing work that DNR and PCA have outlined before.
Thank you both. So if I understand right, everybody seems to like the idea that we're funding some SWCDs with some money, even though the administration didn't put in their larger budget request any money for them, so other than the base funding. So you don't like our source of the money, but you like where the money is, and so we need to have further discussion. So members, that's kind of where we're at on the issue. Further discussion. Representative Hansen. Yep. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to the testifiers, they were talking about where money could be spent, but I'm wondering if it's are there any prohibitions on where, because of where the money is raised, if that limits where it can be spent? So that you reference projects, and if the money is going to the districts for general services rather than for projects, is there any prohibition in the statute that sets up the fund enabling that would limit or prohibit its use in this way? And Mr. Chair, I don't know the answer to that question. I'm just.
It looks like they might be. Commissioner Kadalka is digging for some information, but Commissioner Meyer, I think you wanted to make a comment.
Mr. Chairman, just a brief comment on the Soil and Water Conservation District funding. The governor's supplemental budget did contain funding for the Soil and Water Conservation Districts to help implement the buffer initiative. So I know we didn't get a chance to talk about that in committee, but there were funds appropriated in the supplemental budget to assist with the Soil and Water Conservation Districts for that work.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kadalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I would need to look through and look at other statutes that govern the remediation fund, but there are some limitations in 115B.20, which allows for certain types of ways the money can be appropriated, and then the remediation fund also in 116.155 has a number of appropriations that allows for certain types of actions to be taken. We would need to review these more, but dollars to soil and water conservation districts at a first glance are not included in that.
Thank you. Further discussion to the 826. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments since my name was brought up. First off, if we can spend this money on rain gardens, I don't know why we can't spend it on important work that SWCDs do. Secondly, Representative Hansen mentioned local capacity. It's an important issue. We've done a real good job lately of having grant programs that tend to reward the people, the SWCDs that are best at filling out grant applications, have the resources available to fill out those applications, and are in a position to utilize those grant funds. But what happens in that case is you make the best better, but you kind of leave the rest behind. And so finding dollars to build local capacity with our SWCDs is a very important initiative. And I'd remind members that within this bill, the money's going to end up in the same place. We're just going to Bowser instead of DNR as far as the distribution of it. And if we're going to make progress on this issue, I believe that we do have to find resources to build up our local assets so that they can work with landowners and get the work done that needs to be done on the landscape. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to say that I, too, am concerned about the shifts and all that sort of thing, and that's a larger discussion. I don't want to belabor that here. But the good news I'm hearing from Representative Torkelson is that the majority party is trying to seek a placeholder to address the part of the challenge with water quality in ag country that will enable watershed districts or local folks to get at solving the problem. And I hope that that placeholder, I hope you have larger ideas than this, and I hope you can access some of that surplus that's available to address that. I think what Minnesota knows is a significant problem with water quality. I've had conversations with Representative Torkelson and Representative Rarick, and I think we share a common understanding of the value of the soil and water conservation districts. Where I've tried to move the conversation, it's involved in a couple of bills that I've submitted that I did not get a hearing on, really deals on more the concept that not only best management practices, but more importantly, what I see is the need for measurable outcomes, accountability by watersheds, and coordination. I think a lot of the, I hope as you move forward that you look at ways to coordinate the efforts in the watersheds. There's, I believe I mentioned in this committee before, the Seven Mile Creek in Nicollet County is a good example of a watershed that's been worked intensively to improve water quality that has excellent cooperation amongst the farmers, and I believe are making significant progress in improving water quality. But the key, my observation, the key in those efforts and other efforts we've learned from other watersheds is this business of coordinating the activities, that not taking a shotgun approach to improving water quality, but actually coordinating work within a watershed and holding accountable watersheds to improve the water quality. So I hope we can build on this, and my compliments to those efforts on the part of the majority to work towards that.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson renews his motion. The A26, was it amended? No. The A26 be adopted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The A26 is adopted. Members, I have an oral amendment that Ms. Taylor, it speaks to the SWCDs, and evidently we drafted something. Members, I refer you to page 23, I believe, of the bill. Ms. Taylor will speak to my oral amendment to the DE3. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment, what happened was $1 million each year inadvertently got added to the wrong rider, and we need to move it to the correct rider. So the amendment would be on line 23.15, delete $4,423,000 each and each instance, and insert $3,423,000, and then on line 23.30, delete $3,116,000, and insert $4,116,000 in each place.
And Ms. Taylor, can you speak to the practical implications of what you just did?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members. I believe the intent of the bill was to provide additional money for SWCDs directly, and it just inadvertently got added to the wrong rider. So this would increase grants to Soil and Water Conservation Districts by $1 million each year.
And Ms. Taylor, does Mr. Hagemeyer need to change the spreadsheet, or were the spreadsheets done correct?
Mr. Chair, I think the spreadsheet is still fine. I reference SWCDs on the spreadsheet, and the total still stays the same within the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Okay. So does everyone understand the amendment? It was clarifying that there was $1 million in each year to go to SWCDs. And Mr. Hagemeyer, did we carry that through? I can't remember. Is that carried through? Is that base funding?
Mr. Chair, give me one second. I'll look. I believe it is.
Okay. I'll let you pull out your spreadsheet. I don't have mine.
Mr. Chair, yes, it is ongoing.
Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer. To the Chair's oral amendment to page 23, as Ms. Taylor read, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, that amendment's, that oral amendment's adopted. Members, next we have Representative Hackbarth's A32 amendment, which is in regards to page 18 of the bill. Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 18 of the bill, there's a section that we talked about in a couple of different committees now that supports the four-wheel drive, off-road four-wheel drive trucks. And they have a dedicated account at the Department of Natural Resources that supports their activities. They want to spend some of that money and direct it and hire someone to help them develop some trails. And we put together some language, but the DNR had some problems with it, and the Four Wheel Drive Truck Association and the DNR have worked through those problems, and they've come up with this amendment. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to make a couple of amendments to the amendment, and I hope that you can just incorporate that in my amendment. On line 1.7, change $568,000. So change it from 593 to 568, and then on 1.9, change the 300,000 to 325,000. So I'd like to incorporate that in my amendment, and I would take any questions. The four-wheel drive truck people, I think they're doing this in the Senate too. Oh, here he comes now. If we have any questions, he is here to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. Ms. Taylor, would you repeat the oral amendment, please?
Mr. Chair, members, it'd be on line 1.7, delete 593,000 and insert 568,000. On line 1.9, delete 300,000 and insert 325,000.
Thank you. Anybody care to testify for or against the amendment? Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hornstein.
I don't have a lot of expertise in this area, and so, you know, we're moving some money around, but it involves the DNR, I believe. So can we hear from them on this?
We sure can, Representative Hornstein. State your name, please, and who you represent for the record.
Good morning, members. Mr. Chair, I'm Erica Rivers, Director of Minnesota State Parks and Trails. We are supportive of this amendment. We have been working with the Four Wheel Drive Association for this amendment. These are dedicated funds that come from the unfunded gas tax as well as vehicle registration on off-road vehicles, and so we are supportive of increasing the grant and aid proportion of those funds in an interest of getting additional grant and aid off-road vehicle touring trails on the ground.
Thank you. Any further
questions? Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's helpful.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, thank you. Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair, members, Dan Larson, Minnesota Four Wheel Drive Association. We're thankful to Representative Hackbarth for working with us on this. We have worked with the DNR on this. This is going to be this shift is going to help us to get out into the regions and build a what we hope is a state-of-the-art recreational trail system for four-wheel drive vehicles. So thank you.
Thank you. Anything further to the A32?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We incorporated the changes into the amendment then?
We did. Yes, we did.
Thank you for your support.
Yep. Okay, then Representative Hackbarth renews his motion to the A32 as orally amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Next, members, we have the A18 amendment. Representative Hackbarth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The A18, I believe, is the Game and Fish Bill. I'll find my paperwork here. Yes, the Game and Fish Bill that's currently on the floor. We will have to do an amendment to this as well, Mr. Chairman, because of your amendment that we adopted yesterday. We will need to delete Section 14 from this amendment.
Okay. Ms. Taylor?
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment, if it could just be incorporated into the A18 amendment, would be to drop or delete Section 14 on page 8.
I would incorporate that in my amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So, Representative Hackbarth orally amends the A18.
That.
Yep, okay. He incorporates it into his A18 amendment.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
Game and Fish Bill amendment is pretty short this year. There's not a lot to the Game and Fish Bill. There was a number of provisions in here that we did not include, a number of different trapping provisions that we did not include. I'll just touch on some of the highlights of it's mostly the DNR bill that they brought forward, except for the things that we deleted. But we also put in here an extended beaver season, and we also included, there was a hunter survey that we asked to have done, and that's not been done yet. So we're telling the DNR that they have to do this. So other than that, it's a pretty non-controversial amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. Mr. Meyer, would you come forward, please, to address the A18?
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, DNR. This is what is left of the Game and Fish Bill as was introduced. So there's a couple other provisions from the DNR policy bill that was also added to this bill. I'm just trying to see. Everything else, there's no controversy on any of this. There's been a few things added, I think, as Representative Hackbarth stated, the department can live with. I can go through each provision. Section 14 of the bill does contain the language, Mr. Chairman, that we worked on with committee last night dealing with game birds causing damage. So we probably should take that section out. I already took it out.
We did that.
The rest of the bill is not controversial. I can answer any questions if anybody has it.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not necessarily to the bill, but because we are so close to the end of session and we are already anticipating those conference committees with the Senate, and of course what I'm hearing in strong messages from the Senate is they're not allowing their finance chairs to put one paragraph of policy in their finance bills. Whether our meeting and conference committee is going to have more challenges than we might normally contemplate when we're adding the Game and Fish Bill and others into the finance, just a observation about end of session time frames.
Representative Hausman, the Senate has their ways and the House has our ways, and I'm sure we'll iron things out in the end. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, the most consistent thing I have heard in this room for 13 straight years is that's what's left of the Game and Fish Bill. Whether I was chair, Hackbarth is chair, McNamara, or Gene Wagenius, it's always been the same statement by Mr. Meyer. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Deal. It's nice that we have some non-controversial items to deal with. Anything further, Representative Hackbarth?
Oh, thank you.
Representative Hackbarth renews his motion on the A18 as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Next, members, we have the A15 amendment. We're not sure. Representative Hansen, is that your amendment?
I think it is.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A15 amendment, and this is deleting Section 88. I'll give members a moment to time. Well, I take some time to find Section 88. Yep. So it's on page 81. And this is, Mr. Chair, this is the language about a substantial negative effect and relating to streams, relationship to surface water and groundwater appropriations. And I think we had the opportunity to hear a little bit from DNR, but I would like to have the department come down, you know, Representative Neuberger, since they're a neutral arbiter, to talk about Section 88 and if they have concerns with Section 88. Mr. Commissioner Meyer, this is an amendment to remove Section 88.
Thank you, Representative Hanson. Commissioner Meyer, welcome back.
Mr. Chairman, members, again, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We do have concerns about Section 88. There are some comments in the letter we submitted to the committee. Basically, the 20% number could allow detrimental impacts to a surface water source based upon the time of flow and things like that. The other terms that are there, adding substantial, I mean, that's, again, a relative term, substantially negative. It still doesn't get us to where we need to go. We've been working with this is a bill that Representative Howe has, and we've been working with Representative Howe and Senator Fischbach and other folks on this issue. And really what we want to do is, it's this discussion has made us think a little bit differently about 103G.285 and .287, to the fact that we want to spend some time recodifying those two pieces of law to provide some quantitative numbers into those sections, but we don't have time to do it right now. I mean, we're evaluating possible impacts to changing those sections and unintended consequences in this law. What we would really prefer to do is have this section of the bill deleted, and either some language that would have us come back with recommendations after working with stakeholders, Trout Unlimited, the Irrigators Association, the commodity groups, people who are appropriating water, and come back with the bill next year to recodify these two sections rather than do something this year. So that's our preference, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think Trout Unlimited is here and would be willing to speak on the amendment as well.
Please state your name for the record. We represent Mr. Lincheski. I'll remind you that you have already testified on this.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, my name is John Lincheski with Minnesota Trout Unlimited. Just want to go on record as in strong support of this amendment, and for the reasons Mr. Meyer stated, I think the provision is, it's not ready for prime time yet, and I think the parties are working on creating clarity, and we think it's too soon, so we strongly support the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Lincheski. Representative Hanson.
And Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
Roll call's been asked for. To the 815. Fabian votes no.
McNamara.
No.
Cornish.
No.
Dill.
Yes.
Fabian. No. Fenton.
No.
Fisher.
Yes.
Green.
No.
Hackbarth.
No.
Hancock. Hansen.
Yes.
Houseman.
Yes.
Heintzman.
No.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Johnson.
Aye.
Neuberger.
No.
Purcell. Poppy.
Yes.
Rarick.
No.
Torkelson.
No.
Uglum.
No.
Chairman? Mr. Chairman, you forgot to call me.
Oh, Clark.
Yes.
They're being there being 11 nays and 8 ayes, the motion does not prevail. Next, day 16, which is before us, Representative Hanson.
Thank
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the A16 amendment is, if you look at section 129, and I think both Chair McNamara and I had referenced this, and my reason for, and I would move the A16 amendment.
Representative Hansen moves the A16 to the amendment.
And Mr. Chair, the one of my reasons for moving the amendment is on lines 113, 31 through 114, 114.2 is the deadlines being waived for all the councils. So I'm unclear if what the cost is for the agencies to, we're directing them to prepare proposals and then the councils to waive their deadlines so that these proposals apparently would come in special compared to any other request for proposals. So in addition, I think based on the chair's communication, these demonstration projects we already are doing. I mean, we've funded them, Chair McNamara. We've had Redpath come in. We've had other proposals come in through the competitive grant process. I'm not sure we need a specific statutory direction to do this or for this to be the solution for the buffer initiative.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Discussion to the A16. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, I'm surprised. I really believe this is an opportunity for us in a bipartisan to work with Ag and all the environmental organizations to really do the important thing. If you remember, we've heard testimony about how stream bank and near stream bank erosion is not being dealt with, and this basically what we were doing here was asking Lessard Sams and LCCMR to waive their deadline until August 1st. The agencies are buried in trying to deal with our omnibus bills, and we've met with the agencies. I have over the last 4 months to work with them and of the importance of this, and it relates also to Representative Hancock's great work with WACA. And as folks know, we did not fool with WACA. We kept the agreed upon language. You heard Mr. Larson and Ms. McElby both testify that they wish Representative Hancock would have went in one case a little to the left, in the other case a little to the right, but Representative Hancock stayed on board and stayed with the agreed-upon language. And now this bill, this section, Section 129, would allow the agencies to work together and do some really great work, expand upon things already being done, where we could hold water back on the landscape. Maybe in some cases small demonstrative 1 to 5 acre plots to hold water back close to where maybe some tilted outlets are, or in other cases in rivers, especially in the Minnesota River Valley, where we need to do some larger scale projects, this would work. And it really, really is great work and important to do. And Lessard Sams, if I'm not mistaken, has a deadline of May 11th. And basically what we're asking the agencies to put something together, and they may not be able to get it done by May 11th, Representative Hansen. So that's why this language is here. And if you want to work on the August 1st deadline, I'm certainly okay with if you want to work with the agencies as the bill moves forward to find a date different than that. I just, we're scheduled to get out of here on May 18th. If I'm not mistaken on the date, and May 11th is before May 18th, so that doesn't add up, and so that's where I'm coming from. And I picked the August 1st date to allow them to work on it. I think everyone knows this is a second answer to some of the challenges we have with clean water, and it's a great opportunity. So I certainly would oppose the amendment. As a matter of fact, Mr. Chair, I think I'll ask for a roll call on this amendment.
Roll call's been asked for.
Hanson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't going to ask for a roll call, particularly after the request to work on this. I don't think we've had any of the councils or commissions testify about this. This wasn't a bill. I don't know if they're here where they could testify about that. But if there's a roll call, so be it. I think that I understand, Mr. Chair, that you have a grand idea of working on flood retention, habitat correction, habitat development, wetland mitigation, and demonstrating that. But demonstration projects are what you're proposing here as well. And we've had demonstration projects relating to water quality for 30 years. We know the practices on demonstration, and we've funded them because we know they work. The scale, this goes back to what I said before, the scale of the issue is so large that individual projects are not going to resolve this. And so I'm going to vote no. I think a number of our members, I'm going to vote yes on my amendment. I think there'll be a number of our members that'll vote no. But a couple demonstration projects that are at huge public cost, taking out of the funds that were set up for protecting water quality, and protecting outdoor heritage, we can drain those funds, and here we go. I don't think the councils or the commissions are here to testify on that.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, and I appreciate it. Representative Hanson, if you have a problem with on page 113, line 24, and on... I'm trying to think of where else I see demonstration. If you want to remove the word demonstration, I'd be fine with that if that's a problem. And Mr. Chair, maybe I'll it seems like we're getting a yes nod. So first I'll start, Mr. Chair, by removing my request for a roll call and then ask Representative Hanson if he wants to how he would like to move forward.
Request for roll call has been withdrawn. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair McNamara. I would remove the word demonstration on line 113.24 after retention and before projects. And I think on the second time it appears is on 113.28.
Mr. Chair.
The first word demonstration before projects. And then... maybe we just do that one, then I have one other suggestion.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you. Representative Hanson, I'm wondering if you first want to withdraw your amendment at least temporarily while we fix it.
I would, Mr. Chair, I would withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hanson. The A-16 has been temporarily withdrawn, so to the oral amendment.
Can Ms. Taylor reread the oral amendment, Mr. Chair?
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, it'd be on line 113.24, delete demonstration, and on line 113.28, delete demonstration.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. So, to the oral amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. And then, Representative Hanson.
And then, Mr. Chair Chair McNamara, if we could have some language about consultation with the in consultation, you know, we talk about in submission or giving a submitting to the councils and the commissions. I'm just, you know, I think we want to not start directing. I don't know if we've directed process from legislature to it, and I don't know if they're here, but and we can maybe work on that in the next but I think you know where I'm coming from.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you. And Representative Hansen, I'm hoping you will withdraw your amendment, and I'm certainly willing to work with you and both Mr. Johnson, the Executive Director, Lassard Sams, and Ms. Thornton from LCCMR on timing issues, because I am cognizant of their timeline. So if that works, I'm fine with that.
Representative Hansen.
So, Mr. Chair, if I haven't already, I would withdraw the amendment.
Yep.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen withdraws the A16, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to thank Representative McNamara for bringing this initiative forward. Now, these dollars are going to be spent on projects somewhere, somehow. If we can spend them on projects that have multiple benefits, we have a much better chance of good results coming from these dollars. If we spend them on single-purpose projects, well, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Multiple benefits and working together, I think, is a great idea. I want to thank the Chair for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to weigh in on this, too, because what's happening here, I think, is significant in that the challenge with water quality as it relates to agriculture, particularly in the Minnesota River Valley, I keep hearing at home that we've got to deal with this, and they're asking us to work together on it, and it is going to take a multifaceted approach. I think we're hearing that, and I sense that progress is being made, and I want to thank, again, Representative Torkelson and this committee for moving forward with this aspect. It needs to be fleshed out still, as is evident by the language in this part of the bill. But these are important steps forward to improve water quality in Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Next, we have the 822 amendment. Not sure who that amendment belongs to. I think it's Representative Hansen's.
And Mr. Chair, if we could maybe, this would be one where I think we have members that are outside the room that, because I would move the A22 amendment and ask for a roll call, and then if we could take a few moments to get people in.
Sure. A22 has been moved and a roll call has been asked for. Pages, if there's people in the hallways, if you could ask them to come in, please. I'm sorry. Representative Hansen, to your amendment, would you explain it, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A22 amendment deals with, you know, what we heard earlier in the bill. It takes out the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities portion at H16. It takes out your bills, I guess, Mr. Chair.
I'm well aware of that, Representative Hansen.
And you're still smiling, so it takes out your bills, and that the cost that's involved, the cost savings by taking out those bills is applied with money going, and this is general fund money, so it's not taking from anywhere else, but it's going to more money for forest management, it's going to more money for parks and trails, it's going to adds $1 million into that AIS grants, and I don't know if we corrected the references on that particular portion, so it lines up with the changes that were made in the technical amendment. And then it gives $2 million more in additional money for grants to soil and water districts. So by getting rid of the House File 616, 617, I won't use the word neutral. I think those bills are really poor legislation. I think we've had that discussion. And I think there's a better use of the money. And that money is to meet the needs that are out there for forest management, parks and trails, and the AIS grants. The AIS grant program, the way the majority has done that, they're cutting money. They're cutting $1 million. We heard last night Mr. Forrester talk about it's a 10% cut. And then we are adding more money into soil and water districts here as well to make sure that they can implement the programs that are currently being asked of them and what they can do in the future.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Well, I would disagree with you on the characterization of 616 and 617. Is there anybody that would like to testify for or against the amendment?
And
Thank you. Please state your name and who you represent.
Thank you. My name is Elizabeth Wafel. I am an attorney lobbyist with the firm of Flaherty and Hood, and I represent the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I'm sorry, I have a cold, so my voice sounds kind of funny. We are opposed to this amendment. I am not going to get into where they plan on placing the money, but we think that the provisions contained in HF 616 and 617 that were adopted into this bill are very important to our communities. There are a lot of really, as we discussed at the previous hearing, a lot of really expensive changes that are going to be coming down the line with respect to water quality. When I was here earlier, you heard from Roger from Breckenridge, who talked about how important clean water is to our communities. The folks that run these wastewater facilities want nothing more than to have clean water for their children. However, it's really important when we're doing that that we make sure that we get the science right, that we understand the costs, and that we're making policy decisions going forward in a way that allow us to do this without bankrupting our cities in rural Minnesota. We think that there are some good solutions that came forward in HF 616 and 617. We've worked with the authors on trying to identify ways to pare back and lower the costs. There was also, there was the directive from the chair to try and work on this and try and improve the language to get done what we wanted to in this thing. And I have to say that I haven't heard from anyone at the MPCA. Representative Fabian hasn't heard from anyone to trying to work on this thing. So if there are, other ways to do this, I think that they can be done. I have to say that, for example, with the independent peer review, I do think, having looked at the fiscal note, that they're reading it in a way that I think applies to situations that are not found in the language nor intended by what we were doing, that could have been addressed, perhaps by the language. I think that it may end up costing less than what is being suggested, but I do think that it is necessary, again, in the future, that we are doing things right, that we are including part of the portion that got glossed over is trying to include public comment on, the scientific charge in the independent study. That isn't happening right now. There are things like that we think need to be done. This is very important for our community, so we're opposed to this amendment and hope that this language continues in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wafel. Representative Hornstein.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of a comment. When these two bills have come up and we've heard legislation, it just seems like everyone says, I'm all for clean water, but. And I'm all for clean water, but we want to gut the Clean Water Act. I'm all for clean water, but we want to roll back regulations. I mean, let's be honest. We're looking at cities want to cut some costs, and in so doing, I think there is an impact on water quality, and I think that's what the PCA and others talked about. So I just, I hadn't said this whole session, but it's just been on my mind that we keep hearing this bill being framed as, well, we're all for clean water, and then there's this but. And so you're either for it or you're not. And I think rolling back the Clean Water Act and some of these regulations is not an indication to me that someone's for clean water.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I recall, this was the discussion in committee that triggered the bull hockey speech that has gone on to live on and educate a lot of people. Issue of water quality standards, as I recall, we were told that day that from Mankato to Bemidji, they have already figured it out, and they've done the right thing. In the case of Bemidji, for 30 years. In the case of Mankato, they knew doing the right thing. Even if all their neighbors did the wrong thing, the city manager said, they would still do the right thing because they know it's essential for the economic health and competitiveness of their city. And so there's, I think, this huge disconnect, and I think the suggestion was made that the bill is here because some cities now don't want to pay for the infrastructure that others have already done. They've accomplished it, they've paid for it, and they have good outcomes from it. And so it was one of my, as we've had various discussions, one of those high points, I think, in terms of how cities across the state demonstrated This is doable. Water quality standards are doable, and they do it for a good reason, the economic health and competitiveness of, the, of their region.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. I would quickly remind the committee that we've also heard, you mentioned from Mankato to Bemidji. I believe that one of the epicenters for clean water in the state of Minnesota is Ely, and we've also heard from the city of Ely that they do support this bill. So, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll spare you my previous speech, but I talking about water quality and where we've been in this state, and it's been part of my life for 40 years working on how do we keep water clean, and the premise has been that we will, TMDL, total maximum daily load, we will clean up a water body up a river, lake, after it's polluted. And the issue that Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has been trying to take on over the last 3-4 decades is how do we keep water clean? And I don't want to burst anybody's bubble here, but it's quite likely that the standard is going to go down further than even the 0.3 that's generally proposed for keeping lakes clean for phosphorus, milligrams per liter. How do you keep a lake clean when you're putting thousands of pounds of phosphorus into it? And you all know what I mean. You that work in the ag community, particularly NPK, right? Phosphorus grows stuff. Well, it grows algae in the water, and that creates bullhead fisheries, generally speaking. And I know that the commitment up north has been, as we know, from years ago, decades ago, we committed to keep the Mississippi chain clean. And we've been largely successful doing that. It's going to become more and more important as the global climate change comes in on us, because the more phosphorus, the more algae soak up sun, heat up water. We're going to go from walleye to bass fisheries. Mark my word, lakes are headed that way right now. So I need to speak in favor of the amendment.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I hope that we can have everybody here. I see I just got a text from Representative Poppy that she's involved in the committee next door, but I see Representative Hancock and Heinzman are missing. In this bill, there are a lot of, we've talked before about shifts and transfers, but Representative Hausman mentioned before that there is a huge amount of policy, and that policy has cost. When this bill, when House File 616 and 617 came before this committee, it became clear that this was special interest. I don't even know what to call it. Special interest response, payback, a big jewel in a bill of a lot of special interest, special situation funding. This amendment takes that out. It would make the bill better, because the bill right now is not a good bill, both in the money but in the policy. Now, I appreciate that the chair, we've been trying to change a few things here on the edges, but this you can't change without taking it out. You can't make this bill better without taking out 616 and 617. Legislative approval of science standards and putting the perpetual review process in and the perpetual political process to make decisions for the few that have waited, the few that have slacked, the few that continually are going to complain, and pay to have representation to make their case is a bad precedent for our state. So here's an opportunity to take bad policy out that has a cost, both in the bill but also in the long run. And what we do with the cost that's in the bill is we provide it for public purposes. We provide it for the soil and water districts, which we've heard before have been need additional money. We make the AIS program whole to its status quo rather than giving a 10% cut. We put money into the parks and trails, and in this committee we haven't talked a lot about parks and trails, but with the appropriation that's in parks and trails that came from shifts in money, there's probably still going to be some closures of parks or trails or some limits for those public entities. And it puts money into forest management, which we're nowhere near the governor's recommendation on that. So I would encourage a yes vote on the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. So to the 822 amendment, roll call being...
I think there's a testifier from the PCA.
We've already heard from the agency on this a number of times. Thank you. Unless your position has changed. Thank you. Roll call being requested. Fabian votes no.
McNamara.
No.
Clark.
Yes.
Cornish.
No.
Dill.
No.
Fabian. Fenton.
No.
Fisher.
Yes.
Green.
No.
Hackbarth.
No.
Hancock.
No.
Hansen.
Yes.
Houseman.
Yes.
Heintzman.
No.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Johnson.
Aye.
Neuberger.
No.
Purcell.
Aye.
Poppy. Rarick.
No.
Torkelson.
No.
Uglum.
No.
There being seven ayes and 13 nays, the 822 does not prevail. Okay, next we have the A35. Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A35.
To the A35, Representative Hausman.
And I would like a roll call on this one as well.
Roll call hasn't been requested.
And members, the wonderful thing about this process is citizens weigh in large number, and they certainly have been this year. I seem to be getting more than I ever have, and they have certainly weighed in on environmental issues, and citizens have absolutely weighed in on the Citizens Board, on the MPCA Citizens Board. They have weighed in from across the state by email, and they have also come to this committee as late as last night from around the state. Citizens seem to love the Citizens Board and what it a tool that it provides for them. And so this amendment deletes the changes made in the bill and resumes that status quo that citizens have come to depend on. And in their communities, this was the most grassroots kind of testimony I think we had. In their communities, they know it is a tool that helps to protect them and their quality of life. So I would move 835.
Representative Hausman renews her motion that the 835 be passed and is asked for a roll call. Clerk will call the roll.
McNamara.
No.
Clark.
Yes.
Cornish.
No.
Dill. Fabian. Fenton.
No.
Fisher.
Yes.
Green.
No.
Hackbarth.
No.
Hancock.
No.
Hansen.
Yes.
Houseman.
Yes.
Heintzman.
No.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Johnson.
Aye.
Neuberger.
No.
Purcell.
Aye.
Poppy. Rarick. Torkelson.
No.
Uglum.
No.
Fabian.
No.
Dill.
No. There being seven ayes and 12 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A14. I believe Representative Purcell, that might be your amendment.
It is, Mr. Chair. Thank you. The A14, let me get to the page here. A14 is to delete section 85, page 80. You all can read that, I reckon. The section 85 was about accepting that work permits were required for culverts to be placed, and for the DNR to be involved in that placement, so that the proper sizing and elevation was done. And that's a pretty important issue, and for a number of reasons, and not the least of which is those areas of the state, including some areas in my part of the state that have trout fisheries and brook trout fisheries, and I'm guessing that nobody except maybe Representative Cornish has ever heard of Bungashane Creek, which is a brook trout fishery that it actually is in, I think it's in your district, Representative Hancock. But we've got these little cold water fisheries, and a lot of them are, little township roads that we're having to replace culverts in more and more frequently because we don't have enough transportation funding to keep townships in enough money, so that what's happening in my neck of the woods is they're splicing culverts together. Well, you put an old culvert, splice it together, and it lasts 5, 6, 8 years instead of 15, 20 years like a new one would. So, and the other part of I just believe that having that, bringing some expertise to bear on that, and we all were in support of the DNR here a few amendments ago, and then working with local folks on their well issues and inventories, and so we obviously think the DNR has some good impact in all of our districts, and I just think it's prudent for us to maintain their involvement. And then the second part of the amendment is an exemption, and I think if that was an issue, and I believe Representative Green, this was your part of the bill here. If the town fees were an issue, and they certainly can be, as I've alluded to, because some townships are hurting for funding for roads, that this would exempt them of that fee for that culvert placement. So I'll leave it at that and just ask for support, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. To the A14, Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to speak against the A14. My portion of the bill in Section 85 doesn't change the law, doesn't require or doesn't allow for a changing of size in culverts. It simply is a road issue. It's a road safety issue. It has to do with not having to wait for the time of permitting when you have to repair a road for the safety of the people in that district. The people who are putting these culverts in are the road authority, and they have a responsibility to keep those roads safe. And that is what that section of the bill does. So I would not support this, at least the first half of this amendment, although the second half we'll discuss later. So I'd ask for no vote on this amendment. Thank you.
All those in favor of the A14 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
Nay. The amendment is not adopted.
Next, we have the A29 amendment. I believe, Representative Green, that's your amendment. You just alluded to it. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got the idea for this amendment from Representative Purcell. And this is actually a really good amendment. And, it, you know, the amount that is paid for road repair, for permitting and whatever else goes in there, the fees, is very little to the state. But it can mean a great deal to townships who don't have a lot of money to spread around. So I would ask for a yes vote on the A29.
To the Chair. A29. Representative Purcell.
I'd like to speak in favor of that amendment.
Okay, thank you. Looks like the amendment has bipartisan committee support. I don't see anyone else want to testify. All those in favor of the A29 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Members, we're on the bill. The chair renews his motion. Representative Hansen.
Sure, I mentioned I had one oral amendment, if that's possible.
Oh, you did tell me that. Representative Hansen, to your oral amendment.
Mr. Chair, I would move to delete section 107 on page 101.
Representative Hansen, why don't you speak? Everybody should be there. It deals with discretionary EIS, EAW. Representative Hansen, to your oral amendment to delete section 107 of page 103 of the DE3 amendment. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And earlier I discussed about decisions by anecdote, and you made a case that this has only been used a couple times. Well, the most recent time I think the discretionary EAW is used was earlier this spring with a large potato interest. And I don't think we should be... this is a case where I think this bill and this amendment, or this section, wasn't a bill. Section 107 wasn't introduced, didn't have that public exposure. We've heard the agency has concerns about it. I think the agency, the neutral arbiter, did do a good job in a discretionary EAW to involve getting the facts in this. And I think this may seem like a minor provision, but I think it's a major provision. And I would ask for a roll call.
Representative Hansen has requested a roll call on the removal of section 107 of the DE3 amendment on page 101. The clerk will call the roll.
McNamara.
No.
Clark. Cornish.
No.
Dill.
Yes.
Fabian.
No.
Fenton.
No.
Fisher.
Yes.
Green.
No.
Hackbart.
No.
Hancock.
No.
Hansen.
Yes.
Houseman.
Yes.
Heintzman.
No.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Johnson.
Aye.
Neuberger.
No.
Purcell.
Aye.
Poppy. Rarick. Torkelson.
No.
Uglum.
No.
There being 7 ayes and 11 nays, the amendment is not adopted. The chair renews his motion that the DE3 amendment of House File 846, as amended, be passed on to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
No.
No. The bill is passed and moved on to Ways and Means. Members, we are done. We have done the major business for the year in this committee. I want to thank both sides of the aisle for working on this. But we have work yet to do as we move this bill onto Ways and Means and then onto the floor. And I do not
know if we will be back again this year. It's always a possibility that a finance committee could be called, something could be moved from rules committee to our jurisdiction. But I want to thank the nonpartisan staff who, when we have left late in the evening, have continued on for hours to craft the bill and work with both sides of the aisle to do the good work. And to both our pages, thank you for the great work you have done. And thank you to members. Representative Hausman.
And Mr. Chair, I just wanted to add my thanks. I just think we have the most special pages, and the spirit they bring to their work has made all of our work easier.
Why don't we give them and the nonpartisan staff a round of applause? Thank you. Members, we're adjourned.